Our prayer for this year will come out of Philippians 1, 9 through 11. And in this prayer, this is what Paul says. And this is my prayer, that your love may abound more and more in knowledge and depth of insight, so that you may be able to discern what is best and may be pure and blameless for the day of Christ, filled with the fruit of righteousness that comes through Jesus Christ, to the glory and praise of God. Amen. Our text that Drake read for us today out of 2 Corinthians comes from a much larger conversation, a defense that Paul is having to make to the people of Corinth. Paul, as we know, helped establish the church at Corinth through his mission that we read in Acts 18. We see he has kept up with the situation at Corinth. We see he's kept up with its struggles, and we see that he's kept up with its successes if we've ever read the first letter to the Corinthian church. It seems, though, as Paul begins to pen this second letter, it seems that a group of people have come to the congregation and don't quite agree with all of Paul's theology. They think Paul may have gotten it wrong. And so what they do is these new preachers, and in fact what Paul will call them later on in 2 Corinthians is super apostles. It seems that these super apostles and preachers have come into the church and are beginning to preach a different theology than Paul's. They kind of make fun of Paul, make fun of the way he looks, make fun of the way he talks. And what they're doing is kind of inserting other things into the gospel message. They're saying Paul didn't quite have the gospel right, so we'll make it right. And you have a couple of groups showing up on the scene here. You have one group, which is the Judaizers, which I think we kind of all, if you've read Galatians, you get a good idea of what Paul thinks about Judaizers. But these Judaizers have come in, and what they say is that Christ isn't enough. You also need to continue to follow a massive part of the Old Covenant. And so you have that group who's kind of showing themselves. But you also have another group, and it's, as one author calls it, you have this group called the Spirit people. And they are the people who believe that they have been given the Spirit of God in such a way that they know more knowledge. They have more knowledge than the people around them. And so what they've done is they've separated themselves from the other people in the church because they're better than them. When those other people who aren't as good as them get the knowledge that they have and this Spirit that they have, then they too can have fellowship. And so you have these two groups, and what basically 2 Corinthians amounts to is the enemy of the enemy is my friend. Neither group likes Paul, and they really don't have the same theology, but you know, if you find someone who doesn't like someone, you might as well be his friend, because then you can gang up on the person you don't like. And so that's kind of what's going on here in 2 Corinthians. And so Paul is penning this letter to the Corinthian church to both defend himself and also to defend the gospel, to defend the gospel that Paul continues to remind them that this message that I brought you is the message that you thought was good news and brought you to this point today. And so in this text, and we really focused on, and you know, I know you noticed what Drake read, the verses from 12 to 18, Paul uses a story. And Paul uses a story in Exodus 34. And in Exodus 34, starting verse 29, Paul is using this story to mount a defense and also kind of jar the people out of what they're listening to and beginning to follow. And so this is the text that Paul is talking about. In Exodus 34, starting verse 29, it says, "When Moses came down from Mount Sinai with the two tablets of the covenant law in his hands, he was not aware that his face was radiant because he had spoken with the Lord. So when Aaron and all the Israelites saw Moses, his face was radiant, and they were afraid to come near him. But Moses called to them. So Aaron and all the leaders of the community came back to him, and he spoke to them. Afterward, all the Israelites came near him, and he gave them all the commands from the Lord that he had been given on Mount Sinai. And when Moses finished speaking to them, he put a veil over his face. But whenever he entered the Lord's presence to speak with him, he removed the veil until he came out. And when he came out and told the Israelites what he had been commanded, they saw that his face was radiant. Then Moses would put the veil back over his face until he went in to speak with the Lord. So here we have in this text, we have this veil that is spoken of, that Moses veiled his face before the people so that the people could never fully experience the glory of God. It was just too much for them to handle. And moreover, as we read Paul in 2 Corinthians, as he's kind of basically giving his own interpretation of what happened here, we notice that, as Paul says, during this time, as Moses had this veil over his face, the glory of the Lord would fade. It would fade over time in Moses. And so Paul's trying to make an argument here, and he's especially trying to make an argument against the Judaizers, by saying a couple of things. One he's trying to say is that the old covenant was just a temporary solution for the people. And as that old covenant was a temporary solution for the people, over time, and you probably noticed this as Paul's writing, their hearts were hardened. The people's minds and hearts, as Paul said, became veiled, much like how Moses' face was veiled so that they couldn't see the glory of the Lord. And so what began to happen, this number two thing happened, the people held on to the old lens of the old covenant, and throughout history, that's how they saw the world. That's how they saw their relationships. That's how they saw their experiences. And so their way of seeing, their way of being in the world was both narrow and fading. They never could experience the world the way God truly intended for God's creation to experience it. And in fact, Paul says, and I think we also see it in Luke 10 that was read, that way of seeing was still going on in the synagogues of Paul's time. That their hearts and minds were still veiled. They were looking through a curtain, just barely seeing what they could see. And so when Jesus asked the lawyer the question in Luke 10 that we talked about last week, what do you want? The lawyer looks through the veil of the old covenant. And when he answers with the Shema of Deuteronomy 6, the lawyer's focus of love is still bound and covered by the old covenant. It's a love that's still ordered and focused on the idea of condemnation, the idea of scarcity, the idea of absolutes, the idea of being right. It is a love that is not free, but is restrained and held back. It is a love that is focused on themselves. And we can see that throughout all their many different interactions, as John pointed out to us at the Lord's Supper. We see that their love is pointed towards power. It's pointed towards authority. It's pointed towards prestige. And it's pointed towards an absolute way of living. And in short, what we see in 2 Corinthians is Paul saying, their love is veiled. It's not fully set free. It's not fully lived into. It doesn't bring them freedom. And in fact, Paul says, their love has no lasting power. As Moses was not freely able to be open to them, the people could never fully encounter God and his brilliance. Paul says something different in verse 12. And maybe you noticed it, maybe you didn't, but this is what Paul says in the very first sentence of verse 12. Therefore, since we have such a hope, we are very bold. We have great boldness, is what Paul says. Paul is beginning to tell the people in Corinth, you don't live with a veil over your face anymore. I have never lived with a veil over my face, is what Paul is saying. Since you've known me, since I've come to Corinth, I'm not like Moses. You see me in all of my openness, in all of my weakness, in all of my strengths. There is nothing that you see of me or how I act or how I talk that is like Moses who had to veil his face. Paul is trying to get them to refocus their lives. And in our year of renewal and in our time of refocus, Paul says and tells us what kind of life we can be in for if we're willing to live the unveiled life. And if anybody should know about this, if anybody should know the difference between a veiled life and an unveiled life, it should be Paul. Paul, who once lived according to the law, Paul, who once screamed murderous threats upon the early followers of Jesus, even standing next to the crowd giving approval to the martyrdom of Stephen. Remember that? Paul was standing there as they laid their coats at his feet. Paul at one time bound himself to the law. He accepted its dictates, and he gave over blind obedience to what it said. Paul's life was the law. Paul saw and lived the world in the way of the veiled life. In other words, he might say he was blind. But the beauty of Paul's life is we know that he didn't stay blind, but there's an Acts 9. And not only that there's an Acts 9, there's an Ananias who shows up. And not only that there's an Ananias who shows up, but there's a baptism that takes place with Paul in Acts 9. And when that baptism happens, do you remember the metaphor Luke uses for Paul in that moment? When Paul is baptized, do you remember how it was kind of described? It says the scales fell off his eyes. The scales fell off his eyes. So Paul could be a lot like the blind man in John 9, verse 25. Paul could be a lot like him when he says, "One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see." That could be Paul's mantra just as much as it was the blind man's mantra. And so here we have in this moment a conversion. And this is what I think Paul's trying to get to that I think we miss when it comes to refocusing our life. Conversion means something. Conversion has a purpose. It's not just, it's a big deal and it's a big day, right? When we think of conversion, we think of baptism. But it means something more than just that one day. For Paul, it meant moving from one experience to another, being transformed from one way of being bound in the law, being bound in the old covenant, to now being bound to something new, being bound to Jesus Christ. That there was a turning that took place in the life of Paul. And what Paul is saying is, you too today lived into that turning and experienced that turning as well in your conversion. And so within conversion, the veil has been removed from the hearts and minds. But yet, even today, we still need conversion. Even today, we still need the veil removed from our eyes. The veil which for many still binds them to something. The veil which has them seeing the world in a very two-dimensional way, seeing their life in almost this kind of black and white. A couple of days ago, I saw, a TMC, the movie channel. And it was one of the old Westerns. And I watched it for about 2 minutes. Why? Because it was in black and white. And I don't know about you, but as great as that can be, it's just not the same when you can actually watch it in color, right? And so that's how these people were seeing, though. They were seeing things in black and white. They were ordering their lives in this way, and they were missing out on God's rich color of life. What Paul says is conversion is putting on the new lenses. It's the beginning of what we talked about last week, of recalibrating our hearts towards the brilliance of God's love. And so for Paul, why would we ever want to go back to a life that looks in the black and white? And so Paul in 2 Corinthians is looking at his church and saying, why would you ever want to go back? why would you ever want to put the veil back over your face? And some of you in here right now might be thinking, Russell, I don't believe in that old covenant. I just recently found out there was an Old Testament. But you're right in the fact that we probably don't adhere to that. But remember what I said last week. When Jesus asked the question, what do you want? Your heart and desires, they're outed. They say something about you. And what is a lot of times we realize is our heart is still veiled by something. It's still being covered by something. And so we are still in need of conversion today. We are still in need of realizing that the experience of baptism was not just a one-day thing. It was not just a get-out-of-hell-free card. It was not just a, whew, got that one out of the way. That our baptism and our conversion has a lot of cool things that go with it. And Paul uses them when he says, you are a new creation. You have died to yourself and been raised again into something new. You have been born again, is what Paul says. And I think what Paul says in 2 Corinthians is, the veil has been lifted. Conversion is the beginning of the recalibration of the heart towards something new. And Paul says, it's the Spirit that's doing the work. It's the Spirit that's doing the work in you. And so as I was trying to think about this, and I was looking for a metaphor, what I could use. And so this is the best one I got. Here it goes. So I'm a sucker for those really nice, heartwarming Facebook stories. I don't know about you, but I can sit there and watch Facebook stories that are just sweet. And I've been a sucker lately for these Facebook stories, and they're not stories, they're videos, of families, of family members who have colorblindness. And maybe you've seen these, of colorblindness. So colorblindness is fascinating. I don't know a lot about it, but this is what it looks like. So on the left, or your right, you have like what it actually looks like. If you're colorblind, and by the way, so if you see the right, you might be colorblind if you never knew it, but I just thought about that. Surprise! But the right is actually how they see it as being colorblind. So they don't see the full spectrum, right? They don't see the full spectrum of color. This is what they see. And so there's these really cool videos of these family members who have been colorblind. Well, recently technology, thank the Lord for technology, has gotten really good and has made these glasses for people to put on. And when they put on these glasses, I don't know what it does, but all of a sudden their color blindness goes to being able to see the way most people see. And these glasses do something cool. So it's sort of like this. You can kind of see in between, but they put the glasses on, and all of a sudden they can see the colors in all its glory. Well, the cool thing about this video is these people get it, they unwrap the box, they put on the glasses, and how do you think they respond? Not like, oh, that's cool. Boy, if that was really the response, that'd be hilarious, right? I really wanted this. Thanks for these. But they put it on, and 9 times out of 10, the way they respond is with tears. They're like, this is what pink looks like. Now, if you know me, I love pink. I could not imagine not knowing what pink looked like. But this, you can hear them. This is what grass looks like. This is what the color green is. You know, we think of green and most of us can see it. They don't know it. They've never fully experienced it. They put those glasses on, and y'all, I'm telling you, if you don't have a tissue near you, you need one. Because I was in my office a few weeks ago watching it, and I mean, I was like, I'm not crying. Justin, you're crying. But that's what it does. And you get this picture of conversion in a moment. These people are going from not being able to see fully in the world in all of its brilliance to seeing the world as it was meant to be. And Paul, in this section of the text, is wondering why you would want to see the world any other way. Why would you not want to experience the full life of the Spirit? Live in the freedom. And did you notice that word? Where the Spirit is, there is freedom, is what Paul says. Why would you not want to live in that freedom? Why would you want to be bound to this absolute rightness of perfection, always looking over your shoulder, always wondering if you were good enough, if God thought you were good enough? And Paul says, that's the way your heart's been ordered for so long, and then you accepted this gospel, and you entered into the waters of baptism, and you were converted into this, and yet what do? You're still wondering if you're good enough. Paul says, conversion, baptism. Now let me tell you, that's living in a life. That's living in a way in which God says you are good enough, and so enjoy it. And how do we know? Because we have Jesus Christ, who showed up on the scene and said, this is what it looks like to live the converted life. And if you ever have struggles, if you ever feel the veil creeping back over your eyes, I'm going to give you some help. There was this guy named Martin Luther. And don't forget about his old years, because he went a little crazy then. But in his younger years, Martin Luther had this way of living life. And when he felt the veil was coming over him, when he felt he was moving back towards what Paul is saying, the veiled life, this is what Martin Luther would do. And so take a play out of his playbook. Martin Luther would defiantly shout back at the veil, I am baptized. Not I was baptized, which we like to talk about always in the past, I was baptized, but Luther would do this, I am baptized. Yell it back into the veil as it creeps over your eyes. Yell it back into the sin that's trying to creep into your life. Remember the conversion experience that you had, because that is the experience that began recalibrating and reorienting your life. The brilliance of God's love was manifest and made whole in us to see in Jesus Christ. And through Christ, we get a taste of what the unveiled life could look like. In Christ, we witnessed freedom and love and never fear. In Christ, our life is good enough. We are good enough, and we are free to love apart from what anybody else tells us. We are free to love in a way that the veiled life tells us not to. We are free to be who God called you to be today. Christ witnesses and priest, bringing the good news to all those who still have a veil covering their eyes. And so I'm going to ask you today, why would you ever go back to that way of living? Recalibration begins and ends with Christ. And recalibration begins when you went into the waters of baptism and died to yourself. That's how we start to refocus. That's how we start to move ahead. The Hebrew writer said this, look into Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. It starts at baptism. And your conversion is ongoing. It may even happen today. Who knows? It may even happen today, but your conversion is ongoing, and let it happen. Put on the glasses and see the world the way that God called you to see it. I'm going to close with this quote by Henry Nouwen. Henry Nouwen says this, our faith in Jesus is not our belief that Jesus, the Son of God, lived long ago, performed great miracles, presented wise teaching, died for us on the cross, and rose from the grave. It first of all means that we fully accept the truth that Jesus lives within us and fulfills his divine ministry in and through us. You live the unveiled life. Live it. I am baptized. If you have a need this morning, if you haven't quite, if you don't understand what we're talking about, We talk about the unveiled veil life. We talk about baptism. We talk about conversion. We talk about seeing the world through the lens of Jesus and it opening up, our hearts being recalibrated, our hearts being refocused. If you're not understanding that, there are people next to you who I know can tell you the good news. If you're struggling with life and you need prayers, there are people next to you who will pray with you. We also have elders up front who will pray with you as well. But come now, as we stand and as we sing.